Good morning. We're all watching in our own homes this morning because, as my email said, we've had a problem with the heating here in the building, and it'd be a little too cold for everybody to be here at this point. I'm actually talking on Friday, and it's not afternoon. It's not so bad. We started last week looking at the story of the Samaritan woman at the well, and how Jesus reached out to outcasts. And after the message, we had a little Zoom fellowship time, and a great question came up, a conversation about this. And it was basically about, as we reach out to and welcome and receive those who are outcast, the question was, and how do we do that without appearing to approve of sin? I've heard that question and have thought that question in my own life at different times. In the story of the woman at the well, Jesus, as we looked at last week, by initiating this conversation with her, has already received and welcomed her and has already elevated her status. As we look at verse 16, what we'll see is that she not only is an outcast, but she is a sinner. And we're going to ask, how is Jesus going to deal with this? Verse 16 says this: He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet." Now, we're going to break this down here in a few minutes. But I would just like to say there are many stories in the New Testament, in the Gospels, where Jesus reaches out to outcasts, outsiders, sinners, and he welcomes and receives them, and he elevates their social status. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at some of those, and we're going to ask ourselves, along with this story, what can we learn about that question? How do we welcome and receive without appearing like we are approving of sin? And the first thing is this that we need to understand is that as we look at these different stories, and we're just going to take a few, there's many, but what you find is that each time Jesus welcomes a sinner, he does things differently, depending on the individual and the circumstance and how the interaction goes. So first, there is not a correct answer to this question. There is not a one-size-fits-all. There is one or two very common threads that run through all of the stories. And the first one is this, is that in the majority of these stories, overwhelmingly, he first receives and welcomes the outcast before he does anything else, ever talks about sin, if he even does. Now, there's one comment that comes up often as we talk about this question is people will say, well, you need to love the person but hate the sin. And I have said that, and that is true and at an extent. And it may be helpful at least to you and I as Christians, because and it's helpful in this way. As Christians, it reminds us that this person, this sinner, is a person who is created in the image of God and is dearly loved by God. So that's the first way it's helpful. And then the second way it's helpful is it reminds us that we are sinners just as much as the person who we view as the outcast, and there's really no difference. That statement also has some negative connotations. I think partly as we say that, love the sinner, hate the sin, as a way to justify our own Pharisaic attitudes of superiority. What we could be saying is, my sins are minor and few compared to this person's sins. So even though this may be helpful a little bit to us, this statement, what I would say is that if we give this impression to the outcast person, whoever they, whatever they are, that we are trying to minister to, welcome and receive, if they have the impression from us that they love them, the sinner, but hate the sin, most of the folks who are, we might see as outcasts, they're not going to consider what you consider sin to be sin themselves. So when they hear that, they are thinking, well, no, you hate me when you say, love the sinner, hate the sin. Now, we think, no, but that is exactly what they will be hearing. So I think, even though there's help there, I think there's a better way for us. And I think Jesus shows us in these examples. And so let me turn to those. And I don't know how we're going to do the slide things. We'll try to figure that out. But I will read these to you. Here are the stories. The first one is that I'm going to give is, it's a very familiar one. It's the woman who's caught in adultery, also in John, and that's in chapter 8. And we know that story. Jesus is there teaching a small crowd, and the religious leaders of the town bring this woman, and they kind of throw her out to the ground right in front of Jesus in the middle of everybody. And they say to him, this woman was caught in adultery in the very act. Now, they said, the law says, Moses said that we should stone her. What say you? Now, what's going on, they don't really care about the fact that this woman's an adulterer. What they're really concerned about is what Jesus is going to say about the law. Because they see Jesus and he's mixing up with all of these sinners and unclean people, and they're not happy about that, and they're trying to catch him, disagreeing with Moses so they can deal with him as they see fit. What Jesus does is he bends down, he writes in the sand, and he stands up and says, let the first of you who is without sin cast the first stone. He who is without sin, let that person cast the first stone. He bends down again, he gets up, and they all left. All of the insiders were driven out. And now all that's left is Jesus and this woman, and they even use the word in the center of the crowd. She is now brought in as an insider. First thing Jesus does in the story is he receives and welcomes her. And then he turns to her after all the religious leaders left, and he says, woman, is there no one left here to condemn you? And she says, no, they all left. And Jesus said, well, neither do I condemn you. So after welcoming and receiving her, he offers her forgiveness. He takes away her shame. He removes her guilt. And now he then says, and this one we like the most, and then he says, sin no more. Go and sin no more. And so he does address it. But don't jump there first. We can't jump there. At least in this situation, he addresses it this way. But it's after he's received, he's welcomed, he's lifted her up, he's forgiven her. And he's taken away her guilt and shame. And made it really clear that there's no condemnation on her. Just, hey, go and live differently now, is what he's saying. Not like you've been. The next story is Zacchaeus. We know the Zacchaeus story. He goes up in the tree and Jesus is coming by and all the crowds are there. And Zacchaeus was a tax collector and he was the chief of tax collectors, which meant he was the worst of sinners in the eyes of the Jewish people. And Jesus just looked up and said, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to your house today. The first thing he does, he receives and welcomes him. The worst of the worst. And then he goes and he eats and he says nothing to Zacchaeus about his sin. Not at all in the whole story. Zacchaeus, he doesn't need to. Zacchaeus just responds. His response is incredible. But then Jesus says these words at the end of the story. He says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." The Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. Now we'll look at that. That'll play an important role here in a minute. The third story is the woman who anoints Jesus' feet as she cries and wets his feet with her tears and uses her hair to wipe his feet. And in that story, a Pharisee invites Jesus for dinner, and Jesus is there eating dinner, and this woman, who we find out in the story the Pharisee says is a sinner, which she was an immoral woman, and she works her way in, and she comes down to Jesus' feet, and the whole crowd's like aghast, what is this lady doing? And the Pharisee's like, what's going on? And she starts crying and wiping Jesus' feet. And the Pharisee says, if he knew what kind of woman this was, he wouldn't let this be happening. Jesus tells a parable about two people who owed debts, and one owed an enormous amount of money, the other owned just a little bit. And the king forgives them both. And he says, who will love more? The Pharisee says, well, the one who's forgiven the most. And he turns, and what he does is, and he's just like in all the other stories, he received and welcomed the woman. He did not cast her off as she was doing this, as the Pharisee would have wanted to. And then the next thing he does is he praises her. He says, and he condemns the Pharisee. He says, you gave me no water, you didn't wash my feet, you didn't do this, you didn't give me no kiss. Now, here she is, doing all of these things that you should have done for. And then he says this, he offers her forgiveness, says, she whose sins are many have been forgiven because she loved much. Jesus equalizes this man, this Pharisee and this woman. He equalized the woman caught in adultery and the religious leaders. And he equalized Zacchaeus with the rest of the Jewish people. This is just an incredible word pictures we have. He drives out the insider, the religious leaders, and welcomes in the outsider. Sometimes we act as if the person's sin prevents them from receiving forgiveness, from being welcomed. But in all these stories, their sin has nothing to do with their welcoming, their being received, and them being forgiven. They don't have to clear all that up, stop doing all of that to receive forgiveness, to be welcomed, to be received. No, they're first welcomed, received, and forgiven. And then, if in some situation Jesus wishes to deal with their sin or sees need, we might say, dealing with their sin, then he does that. The fourth story is just this story about the woman on the well. And in this story, I think the first thing is not to sanitize what Jesus is doing by talking with this woman. He is, in doing this, by talking to her, we'll see when the disciples come, it appears that he approves of her lifestyle. That's what the disciples think when they get there. That's what people would have thought. Never let fear that someone might think you are approving of sin hinder you from welcoming and receiving outcasts. Say that again. Never let the fear that someone might think you are that you appear to be approving of sin hinder you from welcoming and receiving the outcast. Jesus is not afraid of what people think. They're continually saying, you eat with sinners. You fellowship with sinners. When Jesus asks the woman about all her husbands, you know, it never tells us, the only sin we know for sure in this is that she's living with a man who's not her husband. And by living with, it's not just roommate kind of thing. What happened to the five husbands? We don't know. Now, can't imagine that they all died. But so, you know, maybe she's a serial adulterer. We don't know. I don't think Jesus is there in bringing this out at like trying to shame her or condemn her. I think what he's trying to do here, and I think the story bears it out, is that he is trying to help her understand where her life has gotten. To see just the brokenness and the mess, and so that he can restore her. So that he can renew her. So that he can help her find hope. He never tells her to repent. He has already received and welcomed her. And there were no qualifications for that. He is going to help restore her. So the New Testament, though it doesn't give an answer to that question, how do we minister to the outcast without appearing as if we approve of sin, doesn't give them one correct answer to that. But it does give us some instruction on when it is necessary and if it is necessary to address sin. Here are some things we need to consider in doing that. And there's no formula here. Again, it's based on the situation. But the first thing is we need to recognize the log in our own eye first. Matthew 7, verses 1 to 5. He talks about not judging or you'll be judged. And don't say you can take the speck out of somebody's eye when you have a log in your own eye. And that basically means that before we address somebody else's sin, we need to understand that we have just as big as sins in our own life. If we're looking at this person and think, yeah, they're the real sinner and we're not, then don't even try. If we're like, they're so much worse than me, I'm so glad I'm not like that, then don't even try. You will only make things worse. You will not be effective. You will not help. And then the second thing, in Luke 19:10, we go back there, where Jesus said, I have come to seek and to save that which was lost. And then as Paul says in Galatians 6, he talks about someone being caught or trapped in sin. When we think of sin and sinners, we need to see people, what we need to see about them is they're lost. They're trapped. They're enslaved. They're captured. Back when we had cats, one of our cats, a little gray one called Gracie, we had a family of skunks, a mom and three little skunkies, make their home under our shed. So we got a guy out who set up a couple of traps. And one day evening, we noticed that a skunk went in the trap, and then there was a skunk in the trap. It looked like two skunks, one in the other trap. And it was kind of, you know, not quite dark yet. So it went out and went to the thing, and there was a little baby skunk in one trap, but in the other trap was a little gray kitten, or a cat. And Gracie was freaked. And I'm trying to get her out, and I don't know how to work this trap. And boy, finally I set her free, and she just bolted, and we didn't see her for 2 days before she came back and would show her face. Now, while she was in that trap, I wasn't thinking, oh, you're a shameful cat. You should feel really guilty about what you just did. No, I was just thinking, free her from this. Restore her. That's what Jesus does with this woman at the well. Restore, heal her, free her. Along with this, it's really easy at times to, and we've talked about this numerous times, about acceptable and unacceptable sin, and we all know that by now the acceptable sins are the ones that I do, and the unacceptable are the ones that you do. But what's happened is many sins have become acceptable for Christians. We don't even know or believe they are sin. So we look at somebody else, we think, well, they don't believe what they're doing is sin, but I know that's sin. Well, let me just say, we could look at one another and look at ourselves and say, there's things that are sin that I don't believe are sin. And I don't know are sin. Let me give you one just in general across our Christian world. There's probably many people who fall into this one. We live in a celebrity culture. Well, you know, rock stars, movie stars, businessmen, famous people who are famous for being famous and no other reason, politicians, and all kinds of rich people are put on this celebrity worship. The culture, in one sense, worships these people. Well, there is a celebrity Christian culture where Christian musicians or singers are Christian athletes, Christian politicians, Christian businessmen, famous Christian people are put on a pedestal by many Christians. They're lifted up. They're given they're called to speak. They're called to make addresses. They're called to say prayers. And what's happening is it is a form of idolatry. But it's an acceptable sin, because it's just what we do. And what's even worse is we do the same thing with pastors and radio and television preachers and podcasters, theologians, conference speakers, worship leaders. And not only do we put them on a pedestal, but we even go beyond that and we give them a platform. And then they, from that platform, we allow them to speak for the rest of us. And when we do that, what we're doing is we are thinking, yes, this is how we serve God. This is how we make Him known through these individuals on these platforms, metaphorically. But what we are doing there is it is our way of worshiping Yahweh on the altars of Baal. But we don't think that. We see nothing wrong with it. In John 4, verse 19, the woman, right after this thing about her husband and all of that, they get in a theological discussion. I'm not going to take time to look at it this week. Maybe next week. We're going to jump ahead to continue this theme. Verse 27 of 4, it says this. At this point, his disciples came, and they were amazed that he had been speaking with a woman. Yet no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why do you speak with her?" So they're amazed. Now, amazed doesn't mean here like it's amazing the Browns are playing in the Super Bowl. They're not, but if it happened, it'd be this delightful, amazing thing. That's not what this is saying. This is more astonished, dumbfounded, perplexed, speechless. What is going on here? Kind of amazement. To such an extent, they're afraid to ask him what he's doing. And then it says this about the woman. So the woman left her water pot and went into the city and said to the men, "Come, see a man who told me all the things that I have done. This is not the Christ, is it?" They went out of the city and were coming to her. This woman, other than Jesus and John the Baptist, she is the first person to proclaim the gospel in the Gospel of John. Now, she's only proclaiming it at the level she understands it. But nonetheless, she is proclaiming it. A practical thing. When we consider reaching out to outsiders, to the outcast, our tendency is to think, we need to create a ministry. Let's see, who are the outsiders? Homeless people, or, you know, whatever the group we want to call them. So let's create a ministry as a church to do that. And that's all fine, but that's putting the cart before the horse. There's a more important way, and it needs to begin. This kind of, any kind of ministry like this to the outcasts and the outsiders needs to be natural and organic. And there are three ways to make that happen. First, and this is what we see with Jesus and the woman at the well, is we used to call them divine appointments. God-given opportunities in your daily routine. Jesus was just traveling, and he got thirsty, and he got tired, and he found the well, and he sat down at the well, and he wanted a drink. And from that boring circumstance of his life, amazing stuff is about to happen. Two Christmases ago, Cindy and I did our normal tradition, and there's others who do this with us because we have no kids in town and we're all alone, and it's really not that bad, but we've developed this tradition of going to a movie on Christmas morning. And normally other people come with us, and there's another group in our church who they do the same thing. And all folks without as much family in town. So we went this time, and this time the Ferences went with us, and we, I think it was Star Wars we watched, and then afterwards we did our second part of this tradition, and that was we go to Starbucks. Starbucks is open on Christmas morning. It's like the only place open on Christmas morning. So after the movie, it's already, you know, early afternoon, we head over to Starbucks, and we're in line at Starbucks, and the person who is serving us at Starbucks is transgender. And, you know, it's, for some people, very uncomfortable in this situation. We place our order, Cindy's at the end, and I think she was paying for it because she would always get, at Christmas time from her students, she would get Starbucks cards. She had a bunch of them. And she said, oh, here, I don't know how, and they never tell you how much they are. And so she said, I don't know how much is on this, but can you tell me, because I'm a teacher and my students, you know, they give these to me and they never tell me how much they are. And he said, oh, I just graduated music education. I've been looking for a job. And he goes and begins to tell his story to Cindy, which can happen. And Cindy listened and said, oh, and he shared how, you know, he's not been able to get a job, and says, you know, people aren't comfortable with me, and it's been hard, and people aren't seem willing to hire me. That's why I'm here at Starbucks, where I'm welcome. And Cindy just talked to them for a while and said, you know, here's some things to think about, maybe places you can go outside of this area that you may be able to find a job, because if you want to teach, that's what you really should pursue and do. And at the end of the very short conversation, it is Starbucks, you know, there's other people there, he thanked her. But he thanked her with this heartfelt thankfulness, where basically what he was really thanking her for was he thanked her for treating him like a person. Because probably all of his life, and I don't understand and cannot imagine the pain and shame and confusion in this person's life. And how many times this person was probably not treated as a person, as somebody in the image of God who is loved by God. That's something all of us can do. And your situations and your daily routine will bring you to all kinds of different folks. But will give you many opportunities to welcome and receive outcasts. The second thing that makes this getting into this kind of ministry, we might say, natural, organic, is based on your own personal experience. The best people to welcome and receive outcasts are other outcasts. So if the things that you have been through, the way you have been an outsider, it is in those ways where you'll do your best ministry. So let's say your background, family, or whatever, there's alcoholism or addiction issues. Well, then, whatever that has been, that makes you a perfect person to work with the same folks, folks with alcohol issues and addiction issues. Because they can become outcasts very, very easily. And then the third thing is we need to develop a heart of compassion. And that, to really love these folks and not make them a part of our church growth strategy, but to really love them, that can only come from God. It's something that God has to build within you, and we need to ask God to do that. And in order for that to happen, we need to get personally involved. Now, start small. We're not going to go out and change up, reach all the homeless people in the Akron area. No, just start small. Find one thing to do. Find one person. Look for one person throughout your day who you can welcome and receive as Jesus did. Maybe volunteer somewhere. In some area where there's a passion for you. And as you become fruitful in doing that personally, then, and you learn and your heart of compassion grows, then what you do is you try and get a few others to form a little team to do it together. And as that little team of two or three people, maybe four, is getting involved and you're being fruitful and God is using you, that's when you come and you say, hey, others in the church, and you begin sharing your stories and opening up opportunities for others to get involved. And that's where church ministry towards this must come from. A natural, organic way of producing a ministry to the outcast. In John 4:35, Jesus, very familiar verse where he says, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. You say there are yet 4 months, and then comes the harvest. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields. They are white for harvest. And what's going to happen is the disciples are hearing this, and in just a moment, we're going to jump to verse 39, they're going to see this harvest. It's all because of this woman and this conversation, Jesus welcoming her. Verse 39. In that city, many of the Samaritans believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified. Did you hear that? They believed in him because of the witness of this woman. It says, he told me all the things that I have done. So when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they were asking him to stay with them. And he stayed there 2 days. Many more believe because of his word, because of this woman. And then Jesus is speaking with them, a small revival, a big revival for a small community took place. And the Samaritans, they were saying to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world. Now, they're not putting her down, it's not just because of you. What they're saying is, you had your story of faith. And we heard it, and we got excited, and we wanted to believe too. And now we have our own faith story. And we're all in this together. Now, my hope is that we as individuals, and I think this is your hope too, could learn how to personally, beginning in small ways, learn to welcome and receive outcasts, outsiders, sinners, in our context, and to then allow God to use that to transform who we are. In your name, let's take a moment to pray. Lord, teach us. Help us to view people as you do, as created in your image, broken, messed up as we all are, logs in our eyes, but loved completely and fully by God, forgiven because of the cross. And nothing else in us. It's all because of you. There was nothing that we did to deserve your love. You gave it to us freely. May we give it to others freely and not make them earn it, not make them deserve it, because they can't. You want them to have it freely. In your name we pray. Amen. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of